Hi there, it's Amy Guth, host on WGN Radio.
And I'm Rex Hupke, a terrible columnist with the Chicago Tribune.
Discourse is at an all-time high in this country, and we're very civilized, and we're thoughtfully...
Shut up, Amy!
Like I said, we're thoughtfully having conversations.
Stop it!
Shut up right now.
For
you
God's
shut up.
Sake.
I swear that I will go over
you.
Punch you! You! So, in a civilized way, let us take a look at what's happening in political headlines right now. Hello, and welcome to another edition of Guth and Hupke on Politics. I'm Amy Guth, and that there's Rex Hupke. Welcome to the podcast closet. Here we are again on beautiful, beautiful Upper Wacker Drive.
It's lovely not in here.
Looking out the window we don't have.
It's lovely elsewhere,
at the gray canvas on the walls. It's beautiful and soundproof in here. We could have a screaming fight, and no one would hear us in here, Hupke.
Yeah, it's true. Unless we were gesticulating, they might be able to see that something was going on.
That's always the cool part of, like, offices with a clear window, you know, because let me set the scene for you, listeners, dear. There is gray burlap, heather gray burlap around here, this here podcast closet. And then there's, like, a sliding patio door, like one might find in a little apartment or something, looking out over the newsroom. So we could, and it's soundproof, and there's two layers of doors. So we could, like, yeah, we could have a throwdown.
Guth could be stabbing me to death and nobody would be the wiser unless they happen to look.
They'd be like, she looks like she's stabbing him, but I don't hear anything. So yes. I don't hear him screaming, so it must be okay. Anyway, this is a weird start. How's
Indeed.
It going, Hupke?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm great. Happy State of the Union time. I'm sure you watched it excitedly last night.
I feel good about where our union is right now.
Yeah.
yeah, it was weird. I forced myself to watch it, and honestly, because I wasn't writing about it, so I didn't technically have to, but I felt like I should, just, you know, because that's what I do. But
being on top of your game and
yeah, right, exactly. But man, it was, I mean, State of the Unions are generally, I think, kind of boring, but this was just impenetrably boring.
Yeah, and this was a weird one because, you know, it had been delayed and we knew there was like the contentious back and forth between Trump and Pelosi that was just kind of set the stage for high drama, which was exciting. But then really hella boring, like a nothing burger of a speech.
Yeah. And the longest, I believe it was the longest ever. It was and it was just, I mean, the thing was, besides his...
Your microphone is doing a weird thing today. I'm going to
okay.
fix it. You keep talking.
Okay.
I'm just going to make some, it's going to make a terrible noise to the listeners.
Okay.
I've just got to like drop the microphone a little bit.
You're going to drop the mic?
I'm going to drop the mic.
Okay.
There. I just have to fix it. It was up too high.
Oh, okay.
There.
Nice.
And it was cutting off your audio range. There. I fixed it for you. I'm basically an engineer now.
Thank you. Do I sound dulcet or whatever the word is?
Your tones are dulcet
just
now.
Dull, as usual.
Dull set.
Speaking of dull, Donald Trump.
Yeah, back to that.
Yeah, so the problem with the speech, beyond just his sniffy, disinterested delivery, was that the writing was terrible. I mean, State of the Unions, whether it's from a Democrat or a Republican, whether you agree or disagree, often are.
I mean, look,
have some really nice lines.
Yes, but they have a purpose, right?
Sure.
They're like, it is the, you know, it's like the boss has to trot out in front of the employees every so often and give a little state of the company. It's that it does have a purpose, but its sub purpose is a little bit of pageantry.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Totally, yeah. And but you just, I mean, you know, the point of it, if there is one, is to try to lift up the country, have some
right.
inspirational
It's like
language.
A little morale, yeah.
And it was just crap. I mean, legitimately, again, anybody could have read that speech and it would have been bad. I mean, it was just a poorly, poorly written speech. It jumped from one thing to the other. At one point, they jumped from, like, you know, childhood cancer to the military or
yeah.
something, and it just didn't make any sense. And so outside of the many other issues with it in terms of things that I personally don't agree with policy-wise, it was just a crap speech. It really was. And, you know, Trump, he didn't, you know, fall down in the middle of it or, you know, use the N-word or something like that.
So
I guess that makes him presidential, but...
If by presidential you mean didn't straight up use a racial slur or a swear word, good
right.
job, buddy.
Yeah, that's pretty much where the bar is right now. So, whatever. It was one of the, usually there are like a few kind of standout moments and stuff. And there were, you know, it was nice when everybody sang happy birthday to the Holocaust, the gentleman who was a survivor of the Holocaust. But, you know, there was just a lot of blah, blah, and a lot of, you know, wall.
A lot of wall.
Wall fear mongering.
In particular, like the phrase, the proper wall. Like he said something like, the proper wall will get built. And I feel like proper is not a word he normally says.
No.
Yeah. A little bit of leaning on the word victory in a moment that sounded like very, are you recycling some World War II?
Yeah, I thought
stuff.
So yeah, he seemed to be taking credit for the Allied invasion of
exactly.
France.
Yeah, no, it really did kind of go there. Victory is not winning for our party. Victory is winning for our country. That's what it was. There's a new opportunity in American politics if only we have the courage to seize it. The victory stuff is like, well, so save those nylons and save the tin can. Like it was very victory garden, home front. Effort, the home front war effort, bleh. Like, no.
Yeah, it was odd. And the, I mean, one of the key problems with him, and it's been this way since the, it's been this way from the jump, I think, because of the way he was during the campaign, is he's completely impotent when it comes to trying to say things. Like, he can't talk about unity because he is the most divisive person
that's
who we've
right.
ever had
that's
in
right.
the office. And it's not even close.
Yeah, your street cred on unity is a little light, bro.
Right. It's just ridiculous. And so he can't talk about that. He can't really talk about race issues either. He's obviously a racist, and his policies are extremely racist. So this stuff, you know, trying to stand up there and talk unity, it's just he can't do it. He's not an effective messenger for that because it's completely hypocritical. And then today, just a little while ago before we started recording, somebody mentioned Adam Schiff to him, and he said, oh, he's just a low-level political hack.
Right.
And so, okay, what happened to that unity you were talking about 12 hours ago? And so it's just ridiculous, and it is what makes him – I mean, it's his own doing because he's been such a miserable person and such a flamethrower that he just can't stand up and inspire people. He can't stand up and unite people. It's just not possible.
Right. The early in the speech, the sentence that I think, there were many sentences that were just like, once you got to what he was saying, because he's just so with it, right? But the agenda I will lay out this evening is not a Republican agenda or Democrat agenda. It is the agenda, it is the agenda of the American people. Like, you ain't speaking for everybody. Just looking at Twitter, which I love doing during live mm-hmm. things, you know,
yeah.
Or going back through later and just looking at reactions throughout the night. There was a lot of like, whoa. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What's this? Hang on. You're not speaking for me. I think there was like a lot of bristling for that moment for sure.
Well, it's all part of the crazy alternate universe that he's creating for his followers, because he says things like that, and then his biggest thing right now is the wall, and the polling is terrible for the wall. I mean, the support for the wall is a vast minority compared to the opposition to it, and you know, people's desire for him to declare a state of emergency over that is even worse of a split. So to say that, you know, he's doing what the American people want is just a complete falsehood meant to further deceive
that's right.
his base, which
that's
just
right.
believes, oh, okay, this is what
everybody's
wants.
With it. Right. Yeah.
And the crazy libs saying otherwise are just, you
yeah.
know.
And then it moved into that very strange World War II.
Mm-hmm.
It went from like, there was a whole swath that was like from 1940 to 1969. Like, because he closed out that section talking about Buzz Aldrin, and like, this year American astronauts will go back to the moon on American rockets, like, or go back into space on American rockets. I was like, dude.
First of all, that's his probably his primary time reference. Given
that's
his
exactly
age.
Right. That's exactly.
But that's
right.
also you know the base that he's catering to.
Yeah.
So there's and it sort of taps into that whole. The good old days concept.
Absolutely, it
and,
does.
You know, this is when life made sense, and you didn't have, you know, all these transgender people and whatnot, and all these crazy liberals, whatever. So
yeah, and it opens like this year, America will recognize two important anniversaries that show us the majesty. That's a troubling word right there. The majesty of America's vision and the power of American pride. That's a second part of that that really disturbs me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't like majesty in there, because that's literally talking about royal things.
Right.
And then American pride, especially, that's not working for me.
Right, because you're hearkening back again to a time when...
It's a veiled white supremacy yeah. sounding kind
yeah,
of phrase.
Exactly.
Then he goes in to talk about D-Day and he then goes into Buzz Aldrin. Yeah, here's a sentence. Thank you, Buzz. This year, American astronauts will go back to space in American rockets. And then he shifts. In the 20th century, America saved freedom, transformed science, redefined the middle class. And when you get down to it, there is nothing anywhere in the world that can compete with America. Like, that language is so, like, and one day, children, nuclear power will put a man on the moon. Like, it's so, sidebar, that line is real. I lifted that from the, what's it called? What's the town in New Mexico where the starts with a B, now by Bandelier Monument, Los Alamos. Mm-hmm. Okay. So Los Alamos, New Mexico is where, like, Fat Man and Little Boy were developed and tested and all that was happening.
Yeah.
There's the Bradbury Nuke Museum is there, and it's really fascinating. If you're ever there, go to it. But there's a film strip, and I love, like, OG, those Americana propaganda film strips. They're so ridiculous. And it lived up to everything I wanted it to be, but it was like this voice, and that's exactly the line he said.
Wow.
One day, kids, nuclear power will put a man on the moon. Like, whoa, bro.
How's that going to work exactly?
Good luck with that. But my point is that the language in the State of the Union really felt that way. It really felt like, my fellow Americans, we're doing a thing and children are drinking milk and everything's fine. I mean, it was real weird with that. And I think you're exactly right. Like, that's probably a time reference that he's hearkening back to. Like, these are the good days when we didn't have, everything was just swept under the rug and everything was fine and everyone was a heterosexual. Like, felt that, you know, like, if we could just go back to the part where everyone's super repressed for their own safety.
Right.
And it felt like that.
I agree. That's an interesting point too. Cause yeah, something about all that, those references I found odd, but you really nailed it though. It's a throwback and it has that same feel of, like I said, the good old days, quote unquote.
Like this line here, now we must step boldly and bravely into the next chapter of this great American adventure. We must create a new standard of living for the 21st century. An amazing quality of life for all of our citizens is within reach. We can make our communities safer, our families stronger, our culture richer, our faith deeper, and our middle class bigger and more prosperous than ever before. Again, totally about, like, that. That's very veiled language, like, our families stronger.
Right.
Families have always been messed up.
Sure.
Like, come on, dude.
Yeah.
Everybody, we just, like, we're real good at hiding stuff in family trees. It'd be like, huh, like, Aunt Mary, what a sweet little old lady. She had 17 husbands. It's fine. She was really wholesome and virtuous. Like, come on. Like, she was, you know, probably like had some kind of crazy issue or substance abuse or something, or killed half of them, or like something was going on there. We just were like, we like to bathe our past and our, like, in this very sweet nostalgia when it's convenient for us to support, like, oh, it was such an idyllic time. I mean, even, I was talking to my dad about this because he said something about, when he grew up, he's like, things were just simpler and people knew right from wrong. And I was like, that's just not accurate.
Right.
We've always had serial killers. We've always had crime. We've always had domestic abuse. We've always had these things happen.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, no, there's so much more of it. I was like, no, you have access to know about things more.
Right.
You have, you know, people, I mean, I was like, Dad, there was a time when you, if your, you know, daughter wasn't married, you sent her away to have a baby and just said she, like, was working for Aunt Mildred in upstate somewhere. And then she came back and you never discussed it again.
Right.
It's not that things are different. It's just things are not, it's okay to not shroud everything in shame. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, and for the better, because doing so is not good for anybody's mental health. Be like, you've shamed the family, go away for 10 months and come back and never speak of anything again.
Right.
That's not good for anybody.
That's not healthy.
It's not healthy for someone to say, I feel like I've been born into the wrong body.
Yeah.
Like, people just kill themselves or just live a lie and not live their full selves. Or they'd feel like maybe they needed to enter a heterosexual sort of situation just for social purposes, or people would just say, oh, so-and-so is a confirmed bachelor or whatever.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, like, that person is not with the person they love or whatever, you know. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I don't know, my dad and I had a discussion. He didn't agree with me. He was like, no, things were much simpler. I'm like, well, I'm not going to persuade you otherwise, so I'll just end here. How's the weather where you live? And he was like, good. Like, he didn't even realize what I was doing. He didn't even miss a beat. He was like, great, okay, good. I'm like, well, anyway.
Yeah, that's the problem, is that a lot of people are just not going to accept that. I mean, I think a lot of that has to do with if you've spent your whole life ignoring the bad things, repressing bad things in your own life.
That's right.
Putting up those kinds of shields. It's not very easy later in life to just drop that and admit to everything. People don't like to admit they were wrong. That's going to be something we'll see big time as the Trump scam unfolds and people, you know, the real truth of what's been going on and the incompetence behind it comes out. And a lot of people are going to be confronted with seeing evidence mm-hmm. that they were completely conned, and there's no way in hell they're going to admit it. They will just internalize that, and they will not let it affect them.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing I've been thinking about a lot lately because, I don't know, I was in a conversation unrelated to politics about people that, like, when confronted with, although it became political too, but it didn't start there, and it was just about, like, people that kind of cherry pick their information, even when they have all the information available to them. They'll, like, zero in on one thing and ignore facts that say otherwise around them. And I think there is such an interesting, like, it's an interesting just case study, like, I think of how that plays out in our big core beliefs in life and in our politics and things like that. And that's a thing, like, we see it every day on Twitter. People losing their minds over, like, that's just not true. I mean, I saw this big debate happening this morning in my timeline with somebody who's an OBGYN about, somebody was talking about abortion and they were anti-choice. And this person, this physician, she said, well, you know, point of order here. This one detail you're saying is not medically accurate. This is this. She wasn't even saying, I mean, she is pro-choice, and this person is anti-choice, but she wasn't even trying to make the case. She wasn't even trying to persuade them. She was just saying, like, one point of order, you've misspoken. That's not medically accurate. They went to argue with her. Like, one of you is a doctor who knows lady parts, and one of you is not. I'm just saying, which is not to say all doctors are right. There's plenty of doctors that get things wrong. But, like, when it comes to, no, that part does not exist in a body, like, that's a pretty irrefutable thing. It wasn't like, I think this is how things function. It was really like, no, that's not a real part. I mean, it was really like that. Like, they were like, misunderstanding anatomy.
That, to me, that is the single thing that has caused our entire society to degrade the most is people's inability or unwillingness mm-hmm. to acknowledge when somebody else might know better what they're talking about.
Yeah.
And I always bring it back to, like, okay, if the plumber is at my house.
Right.
And the plumber tells me that there's a problem with, you know, this pipe in mm-hmm. my house, I am not going to say, no, there's not.
Right.
I mean, if I really think there's something wrong,
if you think this plumber's, like, hosing you, you right. might get another plumber.
Right, yeah, exactly. Right. I might get another plumber, but I'm not going to just go with my gut and say, no, that's fine. The water pouring out from that isn't actually pouring out. So I'm just going to screw this back in and we're good to go. No, I mean, right. you got to listen to, it's like when people, I mean, it's on every level, though, you know, mm-hmm. including now the president of the United States, who mm-hmm. won't listen to his intelligence officials.
Right. And so what do you think, what is the root cause of that? I mean, to me, in my yoga mind, I'm like, this is about a cultural stubbornness around ego, that we are not at a place where we can't say, that's a fair point. I hear what you're saying. My point is this, because even something like that, and again, I'm not one of those, like, let's go back to civility of discourse. Like, I'm not necessarily pushing that line. I just think so the opposite of that is happening. That we can't, even if angry, you can't be like, absolutely not, man, screw you. I don't, like, you're wrong. And this is why we can't even necessarily, like, buttress our own opinion with facts. Mm-hmm. We just, like, we're it seems like we're all working off of such, and I mean we, like royal we, not you and I, although sometimes, just kidding. It's like we are in a point culturally here in the U.S. where we can't even buttress our own opinion with facts. We just, it's all emotional. It's all like a big emotional tug of war with ego and not with, not even with even necessarily cherry picked facts. Like mm-hmm. It'll be like one little soundbite will power somebody's opinion for years that'll cause them to go fight in a public forum mm-hmm. for something they believe in. When it's like, no, I read, or they say,
who?
Cite yeah. your source, fool. Like, right. Come on. And I think that's interesting, but I'm always wondering, like, what is the cause of that? Because to eradicate something, you got to identify the cause. Like, let's go back to our plumber. You can't be like, you can't yell at the pipe leaking water to make it stop. You got to find out where the dang leak is, right? Right. You yeah. can't just be like, well, rip the whole house out. Like, you just yes, got to, you know,
tear everything down.
You just got to, you got to find where the hole in the pipe is.
Yeah.
And so I'm always like thinking of things in that term, in those terms. And I don't know, I think there's a lot going on with that, but I don't know where to start with it. I mean, why and how and when and where did we get to a point in which all of our arguments are pretty dumb, emotional, ego-driven, and cannot be bothered with information? I don't know.
I think, and I preface this by saying, ironically, that I can't claim to actually know what I'm talking about here. This is just my, you know,
that's sort of the whole game of this show. Yeah, right. We don't know. We're just pontificating.
Yeah, but I mean, my sense, and this is kind of a two-part thing, but I think that tendency has always been present in, sure. you know, X percent of the population. I don't know what that percentage would be. But I think technology and social media in particular, probably email first and then social media, has allowed people to not only disseminate their dumb views, mm-hmm. but also to find dumb material to back up their dumb views, further cementing their belief that what they're saying is right.
So it's made confirmation bias easier.
Yeah, I think it's kind of, yeah, right, exactly. It's created a closed loop where, you know, you have your opinion, you have your sources, and, you know, you just keep going around. You keep confirming yourself mm-hmm. by what you're finding. Now, I will say, for example, my dad, and this is the show where we both reference our dads, apparently, was one of the smartest people I've ever known, and yet was horrible at exactly what we're talking about. Mm-hmm. He always thought he was the smartest guy in the room. And always thought he knew better than the doctors or, you know, the accountant or anybody mm-hmm. like that. And he was brilliant he was an engineer. He was brilliant scientifically. And so he was brilliant in what he really knew how to mm-hmm. do. And in everything else, he was an absolute disaster. And it caused a lot of problems. It
Interesting.
Caused, you know, including health problems, including financial problems, you know, these kinds of things, because he thought he was smarter than the people who actually knew what they were talking about. So I think, and so, I mean, I look at him, I mean, this, you know, he's like that ever since I was a little kid. So, you know, it's not like this, that makes me feel like this is certainly by no means a new phenomenon. I think it's more of something where, you know, people have been like that. They now are able to be like that at like hyper, it's like being like that on steroids. And also you've got more people hearing that sort of thing.
Right.
And probably starting to mimic that way of approaching information as opposed to actually thinking about things rationally and having the humility to be like, man, I don't know.
Well, I mean, that's a good point, right? Because it also, we're also, when you're not having a face-to-face conversation, your reaction is different. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I'm trying to think, what is the precursor to the email forward? Which I think is just
the mimeograph forward, facts forward.
Well, right. You had to go like make a pamphlet.
Right.
You know, you had to go, or you just like stood at the water cooler and you're like, hey, so-and-so, did you hear the thing about that? I heard this. And you talk and, you know, maybe your peers would immediately say, I don't know. I read that guy was a quack.
Right.
And you get immediate feedback. You even get body language. I mean, so much of our communication is nonverbal. Mm-hmm. So if you're standing there, you know, just talking nonsense to someone or veering off fact course, it's pretty likely that somebody in a peer group would go, I hear what you're saying, but I think, you know, what about this? Even in a playful way, I think you'd get that kind of feedback. So by, you know, so moving it to like an email forward. I mean, and I say this, I'm not going to lie. And I can say this because none of my relatives listen to this show, but many of my relatives, so many in fact, send email forwards as their primary form of communication with me and other relatives, other people in the family, that I put like email rules on them. Mm-hmm. So sometimes some relatives will be like, hey, did you get my note? I wrote you this email. Oh, I got to go in there and dig for it. Because 90% of what I get from that, from this person or these people are these, this particular group of people that I'm related to, most of it is email forwards written in Comic Sans that is not accurate. And I took it upon myself for a number of years to try to fact check them and like gently and play. I wouldn't hit reply all because also I don't know all 300 people you sent that to. Mm-hmm. But I would be like, hey, you know, one thing, like, yes, Obama said that, but this is the context he said it in. Right. He actually wasn't talking about white men. He was actually talking about something happened a long time ago in another country. Mm-hmm. And he was quoting, you know, I would always just kind of say, like, you've extrapolated that this is about you personally, when in fact he was talking about, I mean, there was one even that Obama was quoting someone else in a speech, and the quote from the other person made it into an email forward to show how un-American he was. And it was like, no, this is, he was talking about something else, and this was the context. And even then it was like, oh, well, screw you, you argumentative. You know, it was like, I'm trying to help you.
Right.
I'm trying to be helpful. So there's something, I think there's like a, all that is to say, I think there's a power dynamic element too. When you're not getting immediate feedback, you kind of take the role that used to be the format of broadcast and newspapering, that you spoke, other people then had to respond to you, as opposed to like real-time person-to-person interaction. And that's, I think, where we've screwed it up. Or that's what's happened as a result of, yes, social media is person-to-person interaction, but there's still a delay. Someone, you got to hit send on your tweet, and then I got to reply to it. Right. And I have a minute to misinterpret it because I'm not looking at you. I have a minute to get mad or think you're saying, you're like talking smack to me when you're not, something like that.
Also, you're not a present human being. You're just a name on a screen. So it's a lot easier for people to, you know, attack, for people to be much more vitriolic than they would be in person, for people to say things that they probably wouldn't say face to face.
That's right. That's right.
Because I think they dissociate between, you know, talking to a human and saying something. Just today, in fact, I got a nice note from somebody that said, can you please go die in a hole for what you wrote?
Why a hole?
I don't know. That was nice, I guess.
I mean, why does that, you know, person care where you die if they just want you to die?
I guess they just want, so the burial has started, I guess. It's kind of forward thinking.
If you're going to will yourself to die at a given moment, you might as well go for it, Hupke. Yes. Be like, I'm going to go die in a dragon's mouth. Yes. Hanging from a dragon's wing as they shoot fire at me.
I'm going to be extruded from a Dairy Queen machine.
I was going to say, if you could pick the manner of your death, choose the manner of your destruction.
He died in a vat of soft serve.
That's exactly what you do.
Which was
exactly
what he wanted.
Choke to death on a blizzard at Dairy Queen.
He was connected to a soft serve machine.
And I would do one final Guth and Hupke on politics, and I would say, this is Amy Guth. We have lost Rex Hupke. I am signing off for us both. He died as he would have wanted to go.
As a soft serve human centipede.
He fell into, he drowned by falling into a Dairy Queen blizzard. So it is comforting in this time of sorrow to know he went out in a way that I'm sure filled his heart with joy.
Exactly.
One day someone's going to take that clip of audio.
Yeah.
Because, look, we're both biodegradable.
Yes.
So one day that's going to be used. And I'll be like, wow, that's really great that Guth, like, made half of his obit for him. Thanks, Guth. Let's see, what would mine be? I don't even know.
Yeah, I'd have to think about that a little bit.
I don't know.
Your cause?
My cause of death. What would be the thing that would make you say, Guth went out the way she would have wanted?
Mm. In an elaborate yoga pose.
She just couldn't get out of it.
Yes. They found her still in the pose.
Yeah, still in the pose. Wow, surely someone's done that, died in a yoga pose?
Oh, you would think, yeah.
Huh. When I was fairly little, somewhere I heard somebody saying that. Like maybe a classmate or something asked me or something, but like adults were around.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how do you want to die? And what a morbid thing to ask a kid. But I said, let me think about it. And then I said, I'd like to be assassinated because that means I've done something important. Like, that's a real thoughtful thing to say, Guth. Wow. Good job, dude. Good job.
Interesting.
But I'd like to go on the record now saying I wouldn't, not like to be assassinated.
I would like to retract my assassination request.
I would like to do that. I mean, I stand by my reasoning, my six-year-old reasoning. I think that's pretty good.
Yeah, no,
because I'm right. Because otherwise, you're just murdered.
Right.
You just got shot.
Yeah.
But assassinated means someone like, I need to take her out.
Yeah, right.
So.
Interesting.
I hear that. That's a thoughtful thing. I don't want to invalidate six-year-old me.
No, but I respect your backtrack on that.
Yeah, I'm gonna say that 40-something me knows a little more about living than six-year-old me. And I'm going to pull that back and say, I don't know. I mean, you know, the joke is when was that? 2 years ago when I did the skydiving that like.
Was that 2 years? No, that wasn't. That'd be like a year.
It was a year ago, August.
Okay,
so year and a half. That esteemed producer, Tom Hush, producer of the Saturday Night Special here at WGN, I told him for real, because you know how I feel about, like, don't say I've passed away. Mm-hmm. When I'm dead, I need y'all to say,
right.
Let's be journalists about this. Say, has died.
Yes.
Let's be factual. Like, I feel like passed away has a sense of wistfulness. Like, I regret to say. I don't think, saying died is not like I'm joyful about it. It's just accurate. Just be accurate in my obit is all I'm asking, except for the photo. I need you to Photoshop that to be really flattering
yes,
is what I
of
need.
Course.
Right. But I told him, like, okay, if I die, if I do not come back to the earth alive, I need you to make sure all outlets are saying dead. And if they say passed away, because I'm assuming everyone's going to report on my death.
Of course, absolutely.
Literally no one would even notice. It'd be like, random woman. Oh, she might have worked in our industry. Died earlier today, jumping out of a plane like an idiot.
Ami Guth.
Jamie Ruth met an untimely end. We think she might have worked in journalism and done something. Maybe not. Anyway, Godspeed. Jamie Ruth.
She met the ground faster than expected.
We're the worst. But during that, I was like, we were talking about, like, okay, let's be real. What happens if I don't make it? Like, what do we do? I was like, here are the three shows you should pull up for my best of.
Mm-hmm.
And let's assume WGN would notice.
Yeah.
Big leap.
One would think.
Big leap. But let's assume they would notice that I had died and maybe at least devote 5 minutes of programming to my death.
Yeah.
Here's some clips for you. Make sure you say died and dead, not passed away, moved on, jumped off the mortal coil, whatever. None of that crap. But also, I was like, I need you to use the phrase, please. I was like, Tom, I need you to get on the air and at some point say, died as she lived. Like, I need you to say that because I feel like that matters to me. Like, that's closure that I, as a departing individual, am going to need. And he was like, you realize you're not going to care if you're dead. I was like, you don't know yes. what I will care about. Don't put words in my dead brain.
I will haunt your ass.
I've made that deal with a lot of people. Like, if it's possible, look, none of us know what's on the other side. We can feel like we're sure, but we don't know. If it's possible, I will do my best. I'll haunt you, Hupke. I would do that.
Well, I would not like to be haunted, per se. Visited
okay.
could be, you know, as long as it's done in a rather gentle and explanatory way. Sorry. That would be good.
I mean, okay, I won't materialize.
Yeah, just don't scare the tuna salad out of me.
Tuna salad. I won't scare your kids or pets.
Oh, yeah, that's appreciated.
I mean, if I thought you'd think it was funny, like maybe I would, like, knock a plate off a counter just because you'd be like, Guth. Yeah, I'd get, like, the shaken fist. I don't know. I do something. Or I, like, make you have really weird dreams because I assume I'll be able to do that.
I would get into all the media and make sure that they identify you as Rex Hupke's co-host. The co-host on Rex Hupke's podcast would be how you would
be totally identified. Would. You'd be like, I need you to run a clary on some things you've recently said. You call it Guth and Hupke on politics. It's actually Rex Hupke on politics with commentary sometimes, occasionally, one-tenth of the time by any youth. That's awesome. Well, let's make that deal now in front of everyone. Whoever dies first, totally use that to, like, whoever lives, use that to your advantage. Milk that for all it's worth. If we're not there to fact check each other, like, let's blow that up and let's do that. That's great.
Cool.
It's cool, cool, cool.
Let's hope that. Let's hope we got another 100 years before we have to worry about
that. I mean, I'm planning, my plan is 103.
Good. I like that.
Because I've had many relatives make it past 100. But like 103 is where I still saw people being independent.
Mm-hmm.
After that, people needed...
Need a lot of help. Yeah.
There's also like hereditary stubbornness here. So it was like at 104, okay, fine, I'll stop driving, you jerks.
Yeah.
It's like that. So I feel like, okay, I could be independent that long. But by the time I'm 103, please. I'll just be like, I need to replace this body with a robot one, please.
Exactly. Please put my jar in a head. I mean, my head in a jar.
My jar in a head. I love that. Like, my core being is in a little mayo jar somewhere in the middle of my chest. Take it out. Just drop it into another person.
This is Guth's disembodied soul. And Upki and Guth's disembodied soul.
Okay, so next Halloween, we got to do this like Simpsons episodes, yeah. Treehouse of Horror, and we have to have scary names. Mine is Disembodied Soul.
In a jar.
We got to use that. We got to use that in the podcast description today.
Yeah, that would be nice. I like that.
Esteemed producer Jasmine Cooper is going to be like, what's wrong with you two? But like she says that every week, I'm sure.
She's largely.
Like, why?
Wisely, yeah.
What did I do to deserve this show?
Exactly.
She's like, How do I get off of this?
Got to stop dealing with these people.
Go work somewhere else. I hate them. Good times. We really only just like touched on the State of the Union. What? Let's see. What other political crises are happening right now?
Well, there's a little bit of blackface going around.
I mean,
the state of Virginia.
What's going on? Because so first we have scandal number one breaks.
Mm-hmm. Governor.
And a lot of people were discussing that. I know Saturday morning when I was here for the Wintrust business lunch, you know, we have TV monitors all around us. Every time I looked up, that's the only story that was on any network was that story. And I was just like, you know, people were calling for his resignation. People were understandably like, hey, not cool. And he was going like, I can prove that's not me. Okay. And now we have scandal number two.
Which was like, the lieutenant governor.
Yeah.
Who would technically come in, obviously. And he's being accused of sexual assault. Like, bad. I mean, it keeps getting... The description of from the victim, who's a university professor in Virginia, is getting increasingly worse the more we learn about it. He's denying it, but nonetheless, obviously, big scandal.
Not looking good in Virginia right now.
But then today was the attorney general, also a Democrat. This is three Democrats, by the way, in the interest of fairness. The attorney general, who would be the third in line if the lieutenant governor goes down.
That's right.
Came out and said, yes, I did wear blackface in the 80s at a party. And I'm like, what? He dressed up as Curtis Blow. And I'm like, you couldn't have done the Beastie Boys, buddy? I was like, seriously? Like, why did you do that? Right. And so it never an acceptable thing, but the 80s? I'm like, that's like, what? I was in college in the, like, I never in a million years would have thought that was in any way something you could do.
This seems like a good plan, especially if you have, here's the thing, it's not acceptable ever, but especially if you're like, I have political aspirations.
Right.
Maybe don't be an idiot.
How do you go, this is the thing that baffles me the most, and maybe it's just because I'm kind of neurotic anyway, but how do you get into politics knowing that that's sitting there. I would spend every day of my life in abject terror that somebody was going to find that out.
Absolutely. I mean, you know what's so funny? I know so many people, especially women, that are so qualified, and I have said in the last couple of years, have you thought about entering politics? You would be so good. You have such, you know, and I'll sit there and list some qualities. So many have, men and women, but mostly women, have named some things they believe would terrorize them as like standing skeletons in the closet, as reasons they would never try, that are really minor as compared to scandals that happen to people in politics that they survive just fine. Mm-hmm. And like one of them, she was like, well, I used to work at a roller skating rink and we had to wear kind of like a sports bra. It was she said it was like a tank top and they had to tie it up to look like a sports bra. Mm-hmm. And she's like, so it was bare midriff. And I know like I was photographed and I was like, so were you actively working as a sex worker? Is that what you're trying to say? And she was like, well, no, I mean, I was just a kid, but we like all had to wear these. And, and I know pictures would come out. I'm like, of your belly button. Like, I just want to be clear. I hear you. I validate whatever you feel. I don't want to ever say, like, that's stupid, don't think that. But, you know, fear is fear. But I was like, I just want to be clear that you're saying you have a JD, you know constitutional law, you feel very passionate about politics and public policy and social issues, and you would not enter politics because a picture of you at 20, whatever, 22, bearing your midriff might surface. And she was like, well, when you put it that way, it sounds pretty stupid. And I was like, it's not stupid. You feel what you feel. But even if, like, I don't know. I just think, like, that. I can't, to your point, I can't imagine someone going, yeah, I totally went to this party and I, like, right. I can't imagine someone knowing that they dressed in blackface and they were photographed doing so and other people were present and could verify. Even if there wasn't a photo, you know, if you got a room full of people saying, yeah, one time that guy showed up at a party in blackface, it's still going to be a scandal. You're going to be in trouble. The fact that you would still enter politics like no big deal is a level of entitlement I will never understand.
And that's why I think a lot of people keep saying, well, that was a long time ago, and look at so all what? The things he's done since then. Right. But I think the fact that you didn't confront this until just now gives me major pause. And I think that's a real problem. And so, you know, and it's, I mean, I hear a lot of liberals saying, like, well, you know, the Democrat, I mean, you know, we... Republicans wouldn't step down in this, you know, they would just deflect. And I'm like,
it's not even partisan.
I was like, right. I don't care what Republicans would do. Do the right thing. The right thing is that it's pretty damn hard for you to, especially as like an attorney general. I mean, that's only in some ways, like, I mean, the governor's bad too, but the attorney general is pretty damn bad when you're talking about, you know, legal, you know, issues in people's lives. And I don't know. I mean, it just, I think that, and you know, look, there's part of me that I want to feel the way some people are talking, I want to feel bad and conciliatory towards someone who has otherwise lived a very positive life.
Sure.
And not allow something that they did when they were young derail that. But at the same time, again, if the minute this person entered politics, this person should have said, hey, this is out here.
Well, that was my next question. So,
and
like,
I'm growing from this, and I understand how dumb that was.
Right.
But I'm going to go and I'm going to show you through my public acts that this is not who I... That's a different story.
Yeah.
But when the governor gets busted for it and then you turn around and say, well, actually, I did... You know, it's sort of like... You're clearly trying to keep
this... Meanwhile, a lot of people like kicking rocks and whistling, doo-doo-doo, nothing to see here in my college year. Well, so that's where I was going to go with that. So say that you... Like, let's go to... Well, I mean, I don't think there's anything wrong with a photo existing of, like, showing your midriff. Who cares? Like, that's just body shaming to me. But, like, let's say my friend decided she is going to enter politics, but that really was bothering her. Well, actually, that's a stupid example because that's a nothing. Like, if that were to come out, people like, look at her looking scandalous. It's not really scandalous at all.
Right. That's like the Ocasio-Cortez.
It's exactly
video
right. That's right.
Dancing thing.
But let's say it's something that is more serious. Like, let's say somebody did something and they're like, man, I think that time I dressed up as Hitler for Halloween, I think I got photographed.
Oops.
You know, I was 20. Now I'm 35 or whatever, 40, and I'm going to run for, you know, office. You know, what's if you were that person's handler, what would your, like, if you were their, you know, PR flack or something, how would you advise them to handle that?
If it's Hitler, I'd find a new job, I think.
You'd be like, you know, I've been meaning to leave PR.
I'm going to jump off of this ship right now.
I've been wanting to do some factory work is what I'm going to do.
Right. I mean, you're trying to pull an example. And Hitler's a little tough one to cross.
Or let's say it's one of these guys. Like, let's say it's the governor of Virginia.
Right.
Like, let's say he's contemplating entering politics formally and running for office. You work for him in some capacity, and you know that this exists. Would you counsel him to say, you need to say real clearly, hey, I was an idiot at some point in my life, and I think you can't just say I've changed, because then you're asking people to take your word for it. I think you have to say, I had a profound experience and it changed me, and I realized that I was being, insert problem here, racist, sexist, homophobic, whatever, and I have changed, and that is why this causes, you know, equality or whatever, equal rights is such a big part of my platform. It seems like that's the only thing you can do. You have to own it. You got to name it first, because then you, and I don't even mean that just as like a political strategy of not getting busted. I mean, I think you have to, just to keep your public integrity, you have to come out and name stuff like that.
Yeah. I mean, I would just say, what I just said a few minutes ago, unless you want to live the rest of your life worrying about this and possibly developing a really good career and then having it completely derailed, you need to talk about this. This has to be out now. And if it's too much for people, and you can't do this, then you're young and you can find something else to do. But figure it out now.
But I think it comes back to like that entitlement, right? Because there are things that I think. I mean, that's a great example, right? Like my friend has a picture in her 20s showing a slice of her midriff, and that's stopping her because she feels that would paint her irresponsibly, even though she otherwise has like a flawless record of everything and she's highly credentialed and totally qualified. Mm-hmm. Whereas like if maybe you have a belief about your own entitlement, I think sometimes that goes along with a feeling like, I know the rules, I just think they don't always apply to me.
Right.
I can get out ahead of them, I can skirt them or whatever. So then maybe there's even a mindset we couldn't even understand because we're assuming that like the governor of Virginia has the same moral fiber as everybody else and everybody's really good and everybody wants to be moral and ethical and everybody wants to disclose everything. Like we're assuming that. Right. He might just be like, eh, what's a big deal? Like he might actually be kind of racist. He might actually be really entitled. We don't know what his moral fiber is. We just know what he's saying now.
Yeah. I mean, my personal opinion is that, yeah, he never thought this was a big deal. I mean, he had to know about it, but he couldn't have.
Right.
I mean, you know, the way he acted about it, even at the press, we totally missed my favorite part of the press conference, which was when he tried to diffuse his blackface issue by admitting he had dressed in blackface or worn blackface a previous time.
Right.
And then as Michael Jackson, and then almost offered to moonwalk.
That's right.
It's and totally... his wife was like, nope.
No.
Honestly, that... In that moment with the wife interjecting and saying inappropriate timing, that alone makes me think that we should just put women in office. it was a perfect encapsulation of like, this is an idiot and he's governor. This is an extremely smart person who knows what she's talking about.
Right.
And she's not governor. Why? What's going on here?
I mean, that's an interesting point, right? Because in one moment, the picture that reveals itself is he's actually an idiot and she's been kind of running the show all along and counseling him and keeping him from doing stupid things.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I think that's very valid to like be very involved in your partner's life. I think that's totally fine.
Yeah. And
equally.
Yeah.
Like when the Ruth Bader Ginsburg documentary came out, like there was a whole lot about like, I think too much, personally. Like, I think they gave her husband a little bit too much credit for her appointment.
Yeah, I didn't see it.
I mean, basically the documentary kind of said, like, had he not gone to then-President Clinton, she may not have gotten even noticed by him. And it was kind of like, okay, let's pump the brakes a little bit. And because you've just spent an hour bestowing her credentials and talking about how when he was ill, she basically like got his ass through law school.
Mm-hmm.
She put both of them through law school and had a toddler at the same time. It's funny because I went to see it on a day that I felt very stressed out and overwhelmed with a bunch of stuff I was doing, just trying to make it all work and get paid enough to make it through the month, you know? And it was like, this woman put herself through law school and her husband while he was extremely critically ill and had a toddler at home all at the same time. And it was like, well, I'm a lightweight.
Yeah.
I clearly can't handle stress worth a good goddamn. Like, that's my problem. So, you know, and they, like, you've just spent all this time talking about, like, what a force she is. And then suddenly, like, and her husband worked it out for her. I love that it was really kind of trying to paint them as true partners that were heavily involved in each other's lives and work and did a lot to support each other. But I thought, like, that part landed a little weird. I'm off track. But
that's okay. No,
but nonetheless.
Yeah, I've been wanting to see that. I haven't seen it.
Yeah. But like in that one moment of that press conference, it was very clear. Madam, you are married to an idiot.
Well, and it also reinforces the suspicion, at least, that he's just privileged and dumb and
doesn't realize
what he did because...
Right. It didn't help his case at all.
If it crosses your mind for a fraction of a moment that you should do the moonwalk...
while you're defending yourself.
Right. While you're trying to save your fucking career it's just baffling.
Right. And I'm going to go defend myself as a drug dealer by getting stoned on TV so I'm calm to tell you why I'm not a drug dealer. Like, come on, guy.
Yeah.
Let's think it through.
It's just weird.
It was like, focus. You're here to say either that wasn't me or I didn't do it and or I did it and I was wrong. Those are your only choices right there.
Yeah.
And he took the, like, I can prove it because I've been Michael Jackson and I'm going to moonwalk. Dude.
I won the contest.
Like, stop talking.
Please stop.
Stop speaking.
Yeah. Yeah. And leave, please. Like, why has he not stepped down? I mean, yeah. Honestly, I think it's easy for me to say. I mean, you know, when your career is about, you know, to crumble in front of you or has crumbled or whatever. I know that I get it when somebody's faced with a literally career-ending crisis like
absolutely.
This.
Absolutely, he's done.
That just comes boop out of nowhere.
But that's the thing. You're done either way.
Right. I mean, you're done, man. You got to go and you're hurting. And it's selfish because you're hurting the party. You're hurting, you know, a lot of people. You're hurting your state that you supposedly care about. You know.
And you're hurting your family because
well, yeah, that too.
I mean, at some point, like for a minute, you're like, wow, she's the smart one here.
Yeah.
But then the second beat of that is like, why are you with this bozo?
Right. Yeah.
What are you doing? What's in this for you?
Yeah. Yeah, are we missing something?
Yeah.
Maybe his moonwalk is really good. We don't know.
Right. She's like, don't show it. And she didn't, she said, right, she was saying, don't show other people because they too will be very charmed by it. Right. Yes, no, yes. That's not what's happening.
Yeah, right.
So it's like, why is she in this?
No, honey, they can't handle your moonwalk. It's too good. And you know, yeah, he just has to go. And again, everybody keeps saying, well, we can't just, if everybody who's got something in their past, like, you know what, can we just have some leaders who all they have is a midriff picture?
I mean, yeah,
you
right.
know what I
mean? Maybe like, just, haven't done anything
right,
important.
Yeah. And honestly, this is sort of a weird, slightly weird transition, but same sort
Let's
of general point.
It.
But Stacey Abrams' response to the State of
yeah,
the Union.
Yeah.
You know what was great about that? She didn't give any in-depth policy anything.
Mm-hmm.
But she was, this is what I kept thinking when I was watching her. I was like, she's a human being. I was like, she is genuine. She is,
mm-hmm.
you know,
right.
speaking from, she, you know, seems to be at least speaking from the heart. She actually seemed to care about what she was talking about. You know, it wasn't like a super polished thing. I felt like it was very, you know, she seemed very authentic, which is kind of a schmaltzy word to use, but you know,
sure,
I mean,
yeah.
I it didn't feel, you know, because so many politicians seem kind of
so rehearsed,
right, rehearsed and stuff. She didn't seem that way, and you know, she just promoted an optimistic, kind vision. She was conciliatory. She wasn't like aggressive. She wasn't as far as like like Trump would be, like attacking people. Or
can you imagine?
Yeah, there was just
like
nothing
in the reverse. He would have been
right. There was just nothing. There wasn't. It just wasn't negativity, and it. It was so much, and it was the kind of thing where I'm just like, oh, can we please just have some leaders who,
a little more of that.
Right, exactly. And who don't have, you know, who don't have the, just, you know, this like garbage back. I'm like, how are these the best people? Like, they're not. These are terrible. How can the three top Democrats in Virginia all be carrying this kind of shit around? You know,
yeah,
I mean,
that's right.
It's just astonishing because there are good, smart people out there, male or female. I mean, I don't, you know, I'm not saying, I mean, I keep talking about needing more women. Because just the men are all freaking bozos, and I feel like they've kind of had their time. But legitimately, anybody just who actually gives a crap and who hasn't, like, you know, murdered someone or something like that, and
right.
you know, it just seems like it's such a low bar.
Yeah.
And yet, here we are.
But I think, you know, what's interesting, like, to go back to AOC for a second, since you mentioned her, like, she was an interesting kind of case study in, yeah, moving on, please. Because not that I'm equating anything happening in Virginia with having a dance video. Those, I'm not. I don't
right.
think. I think I have no problem with her dance video. I thought it was fun. It was great.
Yeah.
It's what, like, I know tons of young people that have some fun video from college. Like, that's no big deal to me.
Right.
The fact, like, she did it. She did it in a great way. She was just like, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh wait, here's another one of me dancing in my new office. It was. Like, moving on, please. And I thought about, again, a very different thing, but the theme of people, like the court of public opinion believing they're busting you for something versus what you know and versus, hey, this is actually, like, a dance video is nothing versus, like, oh, yeah, that photo, you should see my Michael Jackson, right?
Yeah.
But I was thinking about Kathleen Hanna, like, of Riot Girl fame,
mm-hmm.
of, you know,
yeah.
rock fame. At one point, like, did strip for a living, and somebody at some point brought that up early in her music career. They were like, yeah, well, you were a stripper, and she was like, yeah, I need to support myself next. And it was deflated, and it was gone. And it was a non-scandal. It was a nothing. And at one point, I think maybe 5 years ago, there was a documentary about her and that kind of surfaced again. And it was the same kind of like, yeah, that's old news. Where you been? Anyway. And like, that's an interesting, which I'm not saying if you, I'm not saying stripping is wrong. I think everybody, do whatever you need to do to support yourself. I don't think there's anything wrong with any form or level of sex work of any kind. Let's be clear. But I think she's like, that's a great example of like, you can kind of deflate a lot of vitriol if you're just like, yeah, and?
Right.
Or, well, here's what you're missing about this. I needed to support myself. Next.
Right. Or just admit you were wrong.
But in the case where it's actual wrongdoing, that's where I'm going with this.
Oh, absolutely.
In the case of actual wrongdoing, saying like, I screwed up.
Mm-hmm.
I screwed up. Yeah. Like I did a stupid thing when I was a kid. And there's a photograph and I regret it. And I know that probably hurt people. A lot of like he would have come out way ahead if he just would have said, yeah, I was 20 years old in that picture. And I grew up in an environment where I thought that was acceptable. And it was funny. And I realized that's very hurtful to a lot of people, including mm-hmm. people in my state. And I apologize. He would have come out way ahead.
Yeah.
Way ahead. Better. Just say like there's like the upside is not worth the downside of trying to be like defending yourself if you're confronted with something that actually is wrongdoing.
Yeah.
If it's something that people are trying to like pin a scandal, it's one thing to just be like, this is a non-scandal and let me tell you why.
Mm-hmm.
But similarly, like lack of information is what makes things like continue to bubble
mm-hmm.
and continue to like become be a scandal. So it's like if confronted with something that's accurate, like, oh my gosh, I think you worked at a strip club at some point. Like, if you don't say anything, it's people are going to speculate and swirl around it. But if you're like, yeah, I did. I needed to support myself. I was a young person. Next.
Right.
It's a non-thing.
Yep, exactly.
Similarly, if you legitimately have done something wrong, like, just saying, like, yeah, I was a fool. That was stupid and I apologize.
Yep.
Even. I was actually thinking about, remember when Prince Harry dresses a Nazi for Halloween at a party?
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember that?
Yeah. I don't know. How did he get out from under that? I don't remember.
I don't know. I was thinking of that after when all this was happening, and I forgot to look it up because I was like, wow, he... But I think the palace probably cleans things up for you pretty well.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, like, it's still in the public mind.
Right.
And he now is kind of this, like, knight hero character, you know, and everyone loves his romance and how his love story is playing
out. That's interesting. I did not think about that. You're right. I have no idea how he met...
Because
that
was
how
a big scandal.
Oh, yeah,
I remember he was on every tabloid. Like, that was a big deal.
Yeah.
So we got to look that up.
Yeah, we should. I had a very small... thing, and you know,
did you see a doctor about it?
Yes, I was like, doctor, this is getting bigger. No, I George Papadopoulos of Mueller investigation fame,
sure.
Trump fame, when he was first when the plea deal
mm-hmm.
came out,
mm-hmm.
I sent a very silly tweet saying that. Of all the people, it was something along the lines of all the people in the Russia investigation, George Papadopoulos has the last name that's the most fun to say.
That's right.
Or something like
that's
that.
That's right.
I meant nothing about that aside from the fact that it was a rhythmic, you know, last name.
There are syllables,
right.
Yeah.
There's syllables to it. Very quickly, some people of Greek descent.
I remember that.
Got very angry at me.
Yeah.
And then the National Hellenic association or what the exact name of the organization is, but they're based here in Chicago, and they got very mad at me mm-hmm. on Twitter. And for a fraction of a second, I had the reaction that I think most people have, which is, obviously this was a joke.
Right.
I write a lot of jokes. I have a very good street cred when it comes to being a,
The knee-jerk reaction is always like, you people are not, like,
right.
You people who are mad at me are clearly not, you don't get
right.
it.
You don't know who I am. You
That's
don't know
right.
what I do.
That's
I have, I'll stand on my reputation. Just, again, very, very short, momentary reaction along those lines. And then I thought, fuck no. I mean, I have hurt, I mean, because it wasn't just the organization. There were individual people.
Individuals saying,
including some that I know who were offended by this.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, hey, look, it's not on me to say that. This is
that
just
you shouldn't
a joke.
Be offended.
Right,
yeah,
that you shouldn't
right.
be offended. So I very quickly, I screenshotted I deleted the tweet, but screenshotted it, sent another tweet, apologized. I said, I didn't mean any kind of anything relating to Greek names
mm-hmm.
with this, but it was taken that way, and I really apologize for that. I called the guy at the Hellenic
organization. I didn't know you called them. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I remember seeing that. The apology.
No, I called him and I said, hey, man, I am really sorry. I said, this was not my intent.
What was the tone of that phone call? Was he...
Very nice. He couldn't have been nicer. Okay. Could not have been nicer. And very grateful, too. And in fact, he, after that, sent a tweet out saying, I just spoke with... Actually, maybe I didn't say it. It was via email. It was one or the other. I don't remember. But anyway, he sent out a note saying, you know, just...
I remember that.
Yeah, just got a note from Rex Hefty or something. And he offered a very nice explanation. And we really appreciate that. And blah, 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 blah. Done. Mm-hmm. And I did. And I legitimately felt bad.
Yeah.
But I also just...
You zoned it.
Yeah, and it wasn't... Yeah. I mean, it's like it was painful because I realized they were right. I was like, that was a stupid thing to do. It wasn't mine. Right. I could have... I mean, honestly, like...
You could have been like, oh, you're taking this out of context. Like, I'm not... I don't hate anybody. It's fine. Right. Get over it.
Right, exactly.
And it would have kept going.
Right, and it would have been a huge problem. And I would have looked like a dick, frankly. And instead, you know, I... And I'm not like tooting my own horn at all because I was the one that made the stupid mistake in the first place. But, but you know, that I took that and I sort of stored that in my head as a perfect example of when things like this happen, just own it.
Yeah.
Just jump on it and say, okay, you know what? You're right. This was really dumb and I'm really sorry. What can I do to fix this? And, and let's, and I did, I mean, honestly, like, I'm not just saying this, but I did learn from it. I will think twice before, not just a Greek name, but before making a goofy joke about any name. Because you don't know who it's going to affect.
That's
and
right.
There was also part of me who's like, my name is Rex Hupke. I mean, my name has been mocked 80 million times in my life. So, you know, there was also, that was part of the defensiveness thing. But it doesn't matter. I mean, it doesn't bother me when people make fun of my name, but that doesn't mean it doesn't bother other people when somebody says
something. That's right. And that's the thing is we don't get to decide where the level of hurtfulness falls for someone else. And that's fair.
So, yeah, jump on it.
Totally goofy note, but like along these same lines.
Goofy?
Goofy note? Because I never heard that in the third grade. Speaking of like owning an error, if you Google my name and Gizmodo and cat.
Oh, yeah. I remember
you will
this.
Find a story in which I was working in the Chicago Tribune at the time. A couple of us were building some new pages in a test environment that was supposed to only be live if you were in the building on the, you know, in our realm. And that did not go as planned. And so what I did, and it was the day that Dennis Farina died. Mm-hmm. And suddenly the centerpiece of Dennis Farina's death gets knocked out. And in place of it is a picture of a cat and the words like test, 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 meow, 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 or something like that. And the person monitoring the front at the time was like, whoa, holy shit, what's going on? And I was like, duh. And Gizmodo at that point had already screen grabbed it and said, the Chicago Tribune, you know, made the best internet mistake of the day. And I was like, oh my God, I'm getting fired. This is so bad. And then, but the same thing, I was just like, oh my God, what am I going to say? I'm going to have to give a statement. Like, what? Oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh God. And I was like, it was an accident.
Yeah.
Nobody did anything wrong. Like, if I get fired, my story is airtight because it's like, I was doing the thing I was supposed to and the technology betrayed me.
Yeah.
If I get fired, I get fired. The end. So, I kind of owned it to Gizmodo, and I ended up doing an interview that, I don't know, I think of it pretty well. I think he, like, was a good sport about it, and I think I was an okay sport about it. And I was just kind of like, he goes, it, you know, was an intern to blame? Was this a hack? What was it? I was like, no, I screwed up. Like, that's it. Like, I thought I was in a test environment that was airtight, and it wasn't. And I, you know, it ended up on the front page, and it knocked off, you know, the story about Dennis Farina's death, and I'm not saying that this cat, meow, 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 test, 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 is more important than his death, and I apologize. Yeah. I just kind of was like, I'm just going to stand out there and just say, like, yeah, like, because that's the thing, like, if you're telling the truth, like, you're bulletproof.
Right.
Because it's
exactly.
real.
Right. Take your lumps and, move on.
Yeah, and you know what? And I got to say, like, I was, when I saw comments coming in, I looked at the story later, and it said, like, you know, 6 comments. I was like, oh, God, they're going to be so bad. I'm going to be eaten alive. Mm. People are going to be calling me a stupid bitch or something. No. Like, the first comment, because I had mentioned, at the time, my cat was still living, and so I mentioned him by name. And I said, well, you know, my cat, Chairman Meow, is going to be really jealous that I got another cat famous today. And the first comment was like, oh my God, her cat's name is Chairman Meow. Now, silver lining, the reason that cat picture was there is because at the time, Tribune was going to make a photo gallery. The Anti-Cruelty Society was sending us pictures of all the pets that needed adopting that week. And we're just going to have a little gallery of here's some pets available for adoption this week as like a deal that we made with them. And So it was an actual cat that was available for adoption. And I said that in the Gizmodo story, and the Anti-Cruelty Society like got flooded with applications to adopt him. And he got adopted. It was great.
Awesome.
So
that's
he was hysterical. A real cute little gray kitten. He was adorable.
Yeah. It all worked out great.
It all worked out. But once in a while, someone will find that and like tweet it at me and be like, holy shit, Guth. Oh my God, the cat thing. Were you freaking out? I was like, yeah, absolutely.
Exactly.
Like, it's a major news organization, and I had, like, I felt like I'd made a mockery of it and, like, you know, peed on Dennis Farina's grave. I felt terrible. And then I was like, well, wait a minute. I didn't do anything.
Right,
like,
man.
I'm going to show you, Dennis Farina.
Yeah.
Like, screw you, tenants of journalism. I'm going to put a cat on something. Like, I didn't do anything wrong. I just was like, testing to build a page and make the site better, and there we go.
Yeah, right.
So,
yeah.
Anyway, Google that.
Yes, I will. I've seen it actually.
You've seen
I remember
it.
That. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, anyway.
Chairman Meow, greatest name ever.
Rest him, little buddy. He was a sweet boy. Well, that's probably enough of all of that for one day. We got to run. I got to go to another thing. I
got
to go.
Yeah, you got a thing.
You got a thing. You probably got a train.
We all got things.
We got things.
Yeah.
All right. Well, this has been Guth and Hupke on Politics. We'll see you next time. And try not to, I don't know, lie in press conferences like the governor, or try not to do blackface. Try not to, let's see, all the things we've said today. Like, don't give a boring State of the Union speech. Don't be an idiot. If you're being accused of wearing blackface, try not to mention that you once dressed as Michael Jackson.
That doesn't help.
Basically, I'm your life coach right now, and I'm going to start with that one. So there's that. Anyway, don't be a jerk. That's how I'm going to be a life coach. Just don't be a jerk to each other. We'll see you next time on Guth and Hupke on Politics.